Hi everyone, welcome back to Shut Up and Dribble. I'm Jeffrey Lin, and today I have a special guest on, a good friend of mine, Kevin Chen here. So Kevin, how are you doing?
Hi Jeff, it's good to be on your podcast. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk about what we're going to talk about today.
All right, Kevin. So I know you don't necessarily have a basketball team, but you're more of a LeBron stan. And he hasn't had the best term, time actually, in the Lakers.
I actually prefer the term LeBron sexual, but I'll take the term LeBron stan.
All right, okay. You went there? I didn't. Just for the record. Yeah, but whatever flavor of LeBron you like. The Lakers are not doing too hot. I think a lot of people predicted they wouldn't be doing too hot this year because of the bad mix between Westbrook and LeBron James. So what do you think is LeBron's next move after this? Do you think he sticks on the Lakers? I know his contract still has about, 2 years left on it. So what do you think he's got to do? Because the Lakers don't look like a championship contender right now.
So I guess we're really starting with like the hardball questions, Jeff. You're not even going to give me some time to butter me up, and we're just going straight for the negative. So here's what I think is really important, Jeff. I don't think there is a time to panic. I think we still have a little bit of time. Anthony Davis is still injured right now. I think he's returning in the next 3 to 4 weeks. So there's still some time for the team to gel. There are still a lot of bright signs. I watch a bunch of Laker games. Malik Monk has been playing very well. Everyone's Austin Reeves, a.k.a. AR-15, has been playing really well as well. There have been some bright spots on the team. And so I really don't think there is time to panic. In addition, if my memory is correct, Russell Westbrook's salary, he has one more year after this year on his contract, right? And so next year that contract becomes very tradable. And so even if the Lakers don't do well this year, I still think that they have potential to really do well next year and, potentially reload the team. I don't think LeBron is probably going to leave unless, it turns out Anthony Davis has a more serious injury. But I really don't see that happening. I truly think the team is fine. Remember 2017, 2018 Cavs, LeBron also had a very not so good team. And he still did really well, when the time came. So I don't think it's time to panic. I don't think LeBron's going to leave. I think they are going to make, but I do think the team needs to make some moves, and I think they will make some moves prior to the trade deadline. And even if today this is not their year this year, I think there's still, the team still has a good future ahead. And, at the end of the day, I think it's a folly to kind of doubt the greats. Everyone doubted Tom Brady, especially you, Jeff, as a Hawks fan, as a Falcons fan, you probably have very deep memories of that, right? As a Ravens fan, I also have some very traumatic memories. And so I don't think it's good for us to doubt the greats. They always, winners know how to win. Legends know how to take their teams over the finish line. I don't think the last chapter of LeBron is written yet. I think you shouldn't count out this team until they're really out. So that's kind of my piece on the whole situation. And feel free to disagree with my optimism.
Well, first of all, I've never doubted Tom Brady. I just thought it would be hard to come back 25 points down 25 points in one half. I just thought that would be hard for anyone. So yeah, I think I probably underestimated the disaster potential for the Falcons. Because all right, for that, it's not only that Brady had to do everything right, it's that the Falcons had to do everything wrong. So, it takes two to tango. And I mean, LeBron has, you talk about the 2017 team, but he was able to take that team over to the finals. But again, they weren't able to win the ring. And, historically, the East hasn't been, when LeBron's been there, hasn't been as strong. So, and I just think that you make some good points about LeBron, Westbrook's contract expiring, and it's going to come up, and that would open up some flexibility for the Lakers. But LeBron's going to be 37, or he already is 37. He's getting old, and he already showed some signs of decline this year and the previous years, just not being able to like finish at the rim. Well, for his kind of like for his standards, right? He goes from being maybe a definite top two player in the world to maybe towards the lower half of the top five. And frankly, like Anthony Davis is a big worry too. If he's not able to play at a top five level, then he won't be able to complement or support LeBron as much as he gets older. So I think that's frankly why I'm not as optimistic about the Lakers' future, because LeBron's just getting older. Anthony Davis is kind of an old, young person with all his injuries. And just the Westbrook move kind of really hampered their flexibility and took away what was so great about the Lakers before, which was having enough shooting and defense around LeBron and, you know, really creating that ecosystem for LeBron and Anthony Davis to thrive in.
Yeah, you know, I think, at the end of the day, you know, I think if you want to talk about, you know, Anthony day-to-day Davis, you know, I believe there's a statistic I read on Reddit that he's actually missed fewer games than another superstar that we think is an Iron Man, Jimmy Butler, over the last 3 years. I believe that statistic is true. You feel free to fact check me on that. But I believe, you know, I think that Anthony Davis has had some recent injuries, but he's also had periods when he's been really good. I just think that we need to let the situation kind of marinate a little bit more. And in addition, you know, the Lakers always are really good. I mean, I think Frank Vogel's a great defensive coach. I think they've always been able to find some, you know, diamonds in the rough. And so, you know, I really don't think it's time to panic, you know. And also, yeah, I mean, LeBron didn't win the championship in 27-28, but that's because he faced the KD Warriors. No one was going to win against that team. And, you know, and he also, if it wasn't for JR losing his mind, right, who knows? History might have changed, right? And so I really don't think it's time to doubt him. I think the team still has time to marinate. And honestly, the West is strong this year, but even at their current seeding, they're still in the, I mean, they're still making the playoffs right now, you know. And I think as long as they make the playoffs and the team is relatively healthy, I feel that you have to give them at least a puncher's chance of making it to the finals. So, you know, it is what it is. I'm definitely not as happy as I would be, and I'm definitely very nervous. I made a bet with a friend, one of your previous guests, Kevin Tien, about who would finish with the better record, the Lakers or the Celtics. And right now we are at a 50-50 tie. So hopefully the Lakers can pull through and I don't have to pay off my debt.
Yeah, that's actually, yeah, at least you would have expected the Lakers to finish better than the Celtics. Both teams, I think, have disappointed a bit this year for sure. So yeah, I think if you make a good point where even though the West is strong and you have the Warriors, the Suns and the Jazz up on top, you could foresee a scenario where LeBron and AD get hot and they beat any of those teams, because those teams are, while they're very good, I wouldn't say they're overwhelming favorites like the Kyrie Nets would be.
Yeah, I think, because think about it last year, right? The Lakers lost to the Suns, but remember, AD went down. Before AD went down, the Lakers looked like they were on pace to beat the Suns, right? It was a very kind of back-and-forth contentious series. And then everyone, the Utah Jazz haven't really done anything, right? Like, every single year, they always flame out in the playoffs. And then now, you know, we're hearing news that Paul George may be injured for a significant amount of time, if not done for the rest of the season. I believe there were rumors of that, Jeff. And so, you know, I'm obviously the Warriors are good. I mean, you know, if anyone I think is going to make the, you know, if I'm a Lakers fan, I'm worried about the Warriors. I'm actually also probably a little bit worried about the Memphis Grizzlies, because Ja Morant doesn't play with fear, and I think he's kind of salty about like losing like a couple games, you know, like, you know, 2 years ago in the bubble, they barely missed the playoffs, right? And then last year as well. So, you know, I feel that the Ja Morant is, I think he's ready to kind of take it to the next level. So if I'm the Lakers, I'm actually worried about them the most, because Lakers, you know, they have really big size and, you know, Jaren Jackson's a really good player as well. And so, and they have a really, really deep team. And they're young and confident. So if I'm Lakers, I'm worried about them. But the other teams, I'm not really worried about. You know, Utah doesn't really scare me. You know, Suns, I think if the team is fully healthy, I think it's going to be okay. But, you know, I don't think it's as... I think I'd rather be a playoff team in the lower seed in the West than I would be in the East. Because Miami, Milwaukee, the Nets, those teams scare me a lot more than any teams on the West, other than maybe the Warriors.
Yeah, I definitely can see that for both the Jazz. But I don't know. I think if it was Jazz Lakers, I just see a situation where you have Rudy Gobert on Russell Westbrook, and just your life is kind of built upon Russell Westbrook jumpers, which is not a situation you want to be in.
Yeah,
so
that's fair.
Yeah,
yeah.
No,
but
fair.
Like you said, yeah, that's fair.
I was just gonna, you know, if they get hot, I think a big thing was that in the bubble, you know, AD got really hot from the mid range, you know, that I think really propelled them into like winning a championship. And like the upside is there for sure. So I don't know, maybe just a couple of lucky bounces and some good health, and they could be right there.
I mean, that's true, you know. I mean, but you're also bring up, I mean, LeBron historically tends to struggle a little bit, I think, with really big rim protectors. You know, I think that's why Indiana, you know, 3 years ago gave him a lot of trouble, you know, because they had like really
Roy Hibbert.
Yeah, like that, like
the last kind of, Georgetown,
like,
great.
Yeah, exactly. Like I think that's why that Indiana team in 2017, I don't remember who their center was, but I believe they took him to 7 because they had really good like interior protection, and LeBron just couldn't score for the life of them, right? And then when he plays like the Raptors, he kills them 4-0, right? Because that deck then, you know, like I think it was like Serge Ibaka couldn't guard him, you know, and like JV couldn't really guard him either. So I think that's definitely something to be aware about. But once again, you know, AD is coming back, and I think we need to give the team a little bit time to gel, kind of marinate a little bit. Maybe by the All-Star break, if the team is still struggling, and maybe after the trade deadline, the team is still struggling, maybe then it's time to start panicking a little, you know. And, you know, and I think the other thing is, we haven't really talked about this, but I do think, you know, we need to talk a little bit about Russell Westbrook. I do think he deserves a fair share of the blame of the team's struggles, but I also don't really think it's entirely his fault. You know, I think the team is just constructed in a way that it's, like, AD can't really play the center, and they don't really have other people to step up. Maybe, you know, they sign, like, Stanley Johnson. But I think that's going to potentially be a problem as well for the team moving forward. I don't think we can completely blame the team's struggle on Westbrook. I feel that he's often the scapegoat, you know, the scapegoat of the team. But I really don't think he deserves all the blame. But maybe that's a conversation.
No, definitely you're right. It's not just Russell Westbrook. It's Russell Westbrook and the people who decided to trade for Russell Westbrook are the problems. Because he can't. Yeah, and LeBron, right? I think, you know, led GM, probably he must have signed off on such a huge move, right? And they took away all their shooting, all their depth, and all their perimeter defense to bring in Russell Westbrook. So, yeah, putting all the blame on Russell Westbrook is not fair, because when you get Westbrook, you know what you're getting, and he's going to give you what, you know, he brings to the table. The Lakers made the decision knowing that, and so they kind of dug their own grave a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I definitely think there were some questions about it. I mean, but then again, you know, LeBron has always made teams that are not supposed to work. You know, I mean, everyone remembers, like, the big three in Miami, right? It took him a long time to get that team right on track, right? It wasn't until, like, the second year until that team really gelled. You know, that first year, it was kind of crazy. It was kind of a, you know, I'll take a shot, then you take a shot, right? So it definitely takes some time. Which is why, you know, I'm just so impressed with the Warriors recently. You know, Klay is back now. You know, it just really just shows you how, like, a lot of teams, you know, they take a lot of time to get things right. And so that's why it's really impressive when you have teams like the Warriors, you know, who have such continuity in their team. And it's just really a beauty to watch. I'm definitely excited to see, you know, how it goes. I hope the Lakers and the Warriors meet in the playoffs. I think that'd be a really good series.
No, definitely. Especially with the Lakers and Warriors finally matched up last year. I think that was kind of what everyone was expecting a little bit when LeBron went to the West, and it was a bummer not seeing that. So I agree with you. I would love to see some matchup in the playoffs between those two teams.
Yeah.
Okay. So moving on to the basketball adjacent topic.
Yes.
I wanted to have you on here today because I know you've been following the saga of Enes Freedom a lot. So just for a little background, Enes Freedom, who was formerly Enes Kanter, he is currently a player for the Boston Celtics. And recently he's been very, you know, active in his activism against China, against, you know, he's been really active against the current administration in Turkey, where I believe he's now banned from going back there, because he's been so outspoken against the regime there. And he's been really branded himself as a human rights activist. More recently, he's actually spoken out against China. And more directly to the NBA, he's spoken out against, you know, players in the NBA who have contracts with Nike. And Nike has, you know, a lot of business activity in China. And he's been very outspoken against LeBron James, even Jeremy Lin, who, you know, he mistakenly called Chinese in a very interesting Twitter post. But he's been outspoken against speaking out against China, and he's kind of insinuated slash directly said that they're picking money over human rights. And I just want to, you know, kind of get your take on that.
Yeah, so I mean, first of all, you know, I just want to, you know, maybe set a foundation and some, you know, kind of some ground rules. I feel like before we talk about, you know, NS freedom, we need to talk about kind of separating the person from the message. I think that's the first thing we need to do. You know, I know some people really dislike people like Kanner or Freedom, excuse me, because he was associated with various kind of Turkish religious movements. Some on the internet have even derisively called them like cults, or just, you know, like just very radical religious movements. I mean, I think he's removed with like the Gulen movement, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. I know some have even characterized that movement as like a terrorist movement. So, you know, there are going to be people who know this issue. I'm not a Turkish expert. And so people are going to probably have very strong opinions on this. But I think it's the first thing, we need to separate the person from the message. And so, I mean, why don't we talk about the message first, Jeff, and then maybe you can talk about the person. So I think the message is on point. This may be a downer for a lot of people to recognize, but what's going on in China right now, and what's going on, what happened in Hong Kong, what happened to in Xinjiang with the Uyghurs, should be unacceptable in the 21st century, and it should be the burden of all of us, all, you know, people in the world who believe in freedom, who believe in human dignity, who believe in, you know, basic rights of people, that we should call that out and we should, you know, stand up for what's right. So I think we can all applaud, you know, Freedom for his moves there. But then once we do that, we can maybe dig a little bit deeper on his kind of personality. And so maybe Jeff, I want to hear your thoughts as well before, about him and kind of the person behind the message.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you on that, Kevin, that his message is something everyone should agree with because of what, you know, the human rights atrocities that are happening in Xinjiang, kind of what China has done in Hong Kong and in Xinjiang is unacceptable. You know, I do applaud Freedom for speaking out against it. I think it's potentially been the way he's done it that has probably rubbed people the wrong way. It seems, well, I also don't necessarily know if that is entirely fair on it, because I think first of all, I don't think he has the best reputation in the NBA. I think he's kind of known as an instigator type person, and he's kind of known as an offense first big man who doesn't defend. And I think those types of players are kind of known as quote unquote soft and not really doing the job that a normal big would tend to do. And he has also probably been overpaid for a while, for a good time. And now he's properly paid. And if, you know, first and foremost, this has nothing to, you know, this should have no effect on his message at all, right? Like, it doesn't matter whether you're a soft basketball player, but, and you're speaking out against human rights abuses, like that shouldn't matter. But I think it kind of does. And I think it also, I think the way he attacked LeBron James, I think especially, who has a, you know, as a leader and as a person, has a very strong record, not only in the NBA, but what he's done for the community and literally starting a school and sending kids to college in Akron. I don't think you can say with a straight face that LeBron doesn't care about his community. But I think you can say with a straight face that he probably doesn't care too much about what's going on in China. And I think you can say that a lot about the NBA because, as we've saw after the Daryl Morey controversy, when he spoke out in favor of Hong Kong, the NBA kind of threw him under the bus. And I think Freedom has a good point in bringing these issues to the forefront because, you know, the NBA has been really a leader in the social justice movement, especially for supporting Black Lives Matter and issues of that nature in America, but not necessarily as much, well, basically zero with China, right? There really hasn't been a movement on that front.
So what I would say is, maybe this is a particularly controversial point, I actually don't mind the way Freedom has engaged on Twitter. I know people may disagree with his very aggressive, some would call it even abrasive, sometimes it's been frankly insensitive, you know, and I can agree it's insensitive, but I this is kind of my larger point, is that I feel that if a person is in his position, he kind of has to do something like that to kind of get in people's faces. And then the second thing is that I understand your point that LeBron may not care about what's going on in China. But remember, the NBA is an international league, right? If LeBron doesn't care about what's going on in China, why should Freedom care about Black Lives Matter? Why should the international players, you know, from places that are, you know, that may not have that many people of African descent care about, you know, Black Lives Matter, right? If the players are part of, like, you know, they have to be, I think it's for the strength of the NBA's message, the players should support each other of their movements. Because otherwise, if you are not willing to support someone else's movement, how can you expect them to support yours? Right? And I think both causes, Black Lives Matter, and, you know, especially with what was going on back in 2020, I think that deserves support as well. I just think that it's hard to just say, well, you know, Freedom, you got to take a back seat and, you know, take a chill pill. But people were look at LeBron's post. Like, LeBron has posted some very, very passionate posts, you know, about Breonna Taylor, for example. Right. And then I don't think anyone was saying, maybe other than maybe some very right wing conservatives saying, oh, LeBron, like, I don't know, man, maybe you like rustled some feathers. Right. I think it's important for the players to speak out on what the issues they care about and call people out and speak out passionately and aggressively. I have no problem with that. I think that that's the only way they're going to change minds. And sure, maybe Cantor is doing that because he can, you know, go on Fox News afterwards, right? And go on Tucker Carlson, and Tucker can be like, oh, good job, Cantor, or Freedom Cantor. Like, you called out LeBron on Twitter. Like, we like that because we don't like LeBron. But in general, I think it's really important that, you know, the players support each other, right? There's a great, let me give you an example. Do you watch Ted Lasso, Jeff?
Absolutely. I love
right,
Ted Lasso.
Right, so you know this, right? In season two, one of the Nigerian English players, like, wants to boycott an oil company, right? Because they're polluting his home country, right? And the players all show solidarity, right? Now, not those players probably have never been to Nigeria, right? Or Africa in general, right? But why do they go out there and why do they like black out their names and support the cause? Because they're all on the same team, right? They're brothers, right? And so I think people have called the NBA like a brotherhood, right? Of people. And so I think it's important. I think it's honestly, it's a shame that not many players have stood up with Cantor Freedom on this. I think it's a really big shame. I think more people should, because if you don't stand up for other people's beliefs, at the end of the day, how can you expect others to stand up for yours? So that's kind of my big rant on the issue, Jeff. And I'm sorry if I took up too much time.
No, totally fine. Yeah. I think I agree with you. It's hard to expect someone to support you if you don't even kind of like give them the time of day on their issue. And Cantor, Freedom has been very outspoken in support of Black Lives Matter. I think he made some tweets or comments that he wanted to kneel with the players, and, you know, he supported like Colin Kaepernick and everything. So I think, you know, he's he's genuine about wanting to support that. And yeah, I think the NBA, just all these NBA players, they just don't necessarily have the, maybe the NBA in general has this weird relationship with China, right? Where they, it feels like they can't be so outspoken against China and what the government's doing, what the government's doing there. But also, I think two questions to kind of move to continue forward with this topic. I think the first one is, do you think that more players would pay attention to Cantor if he was some sort of superstar on their team? Because, you know, he is the second big now. He's fringe rotation player on a play-in team right now. And I guess the second question is, there's this issue of, is he being kind of used as a talking point for kind of like right-wing talk show hosts like Tucker Carlson?
Yeah, so let me answer the first question. So I think it's like a catch-22, right? If Cantor Freedom, you know, or I think his full name is actually Cantor Freedom, so I think we can call him Cantor Freedom because that's his middle name. But if Cantor Freedom was a superstar, maybe he wouldn't speak up so fervently as he has. There is a lot of money going into like Shoedale's jersey sales into China, right? And you know, Chinese people watch. I mean, like, what is the old quote? The alleged quote is like, Republicans buy basketball shoes. Like, Chinese people also buy basketball shoes, right? And so, I just think that I don't know. I think maybe he wouldn't. Maybe the fact that he is a fringe rotation player gives him the freedom to speak out because he's not that big of a star. He doesn't have that much to lose. I mean, he has enough money to live comfortably for the rest of his life, but he's not risking significant business interests that the other players would be risking, right? And so maybe that gives him the freedom to speak out. So on the second point, so essentially I'm going to read you the quote that he said on Tucker Carlson that I think calls a lot of stirs. So I'm just read it verbatim. I have it up. So he says, quote, "I feel like they should keep their mouth shut and stop criticizing the greatest nation in the world. And they should focus on their freedoms and their human rights and democracy," end quote. So he's, I think, you know, talking about, I think in that quote, Kander's addressing the people who are kind of speaking out a lot about and maybe urging the United States to reform its political system and its treatment of minorities in the country. And so I think that was a very controversial statement, Jeff. I think we can both agree that it was very controversial and it caused a lot of stirs. And, you know, I definitely personally don't agree with that. But I don't think, so let me try to answer your question then. I don't think it's right to say that Cantor Freedom is being used by these movements. It's more, I think, of a marriage of convenience. And I think it's often a marriage of convenience that we have seen before about people who have spoken out very fervently against the Chinese government and, you know, the People's Republic of China. In the sense that there is a natural affinity right now in the current political sphere between people who are very anti-China and the conservative right. And it's like a natural marriage of convenience, right? You know, Cantor Freedom gets to have a tribe, right? A people that can kind of protect him, right? And kind of cover him in case, you know, he comes under attack. And then he can kind of, you know, help represent those people and kind of, you know, spread their views. So I really think it's a marriage of convenience. I wouldn't really call it a kind of he's being used by them. I don't know. I feel like, I don't know. He's like, he's made like close to maybe $100 million in life. I don't know if he's like being silently manipulated. I think it's more of there's probably more of like a natural co-beneficiary, like, you know, relationship between both sides in that situation.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think this idea that he's being used kind of takes away a little bit from the agency of Anna's Cantor Freedom, right? I think he's probably, you know, I would give him the benefit of the doubt that he's savvy enough to know what he's doing and kind of like what he wants to say, and he can control his own message. So I think I agree that saying that he's being used is going a bit too far. I like your phrase of a marriage of convenience between his messaging and you know, him having a platform to talk about what he wants to talk about and being able to go on these right-wing talk shows. It's just, it's interesting to me now. I feel like he doesn't speak out as much about Turkey and it's all this China stuff recently. I don't know if it's kind of, you know, maybe that's probably just gets the most attention, because I don't know if, you know, if China is not on the forefront of every NBA player's mind, Turkey is certainly not on the forefront of every NBA player's mind.
Yeah, I think that's probably it, Jeff. I think that's it. And to kind of just clarify, and maybe just also to kind of add my point, maybe it's also like the, like, I don't, I've never been on Fox News. I mean, probably will never ever be on Fox News in my life. But I feel like Fox kind of, maybe when you're on an interview with Fox hosts, they kind of egg you on. And so maybe you say something a little bit more inflammatory than you mean. Because in a subsequent interview with, you know, like another newspaper, he said, quote, "What I meant was, where I'm coming from, Turkey is a brutal dictatorship. Quote, we have no freedom of speech, religion, or expression. We have no democracy. Turkey could have been a branch of Islam in the West, but just became all that stuff that's happened." And so what he says is, so what I meant was, people should feel lucky to be best in the situation in America. And there's obviously many issues in America. I'm definitely not denying it. But I meant to was, at least they're not a country like Turkey, Syria, North Korea, Venezuela, or Belarus, end quote. So when he kind of had a subsequent interview, I think he kind of walked the statements back. I feel like he kind of knew that he kind of overstepped a little bit. And he kind of goes, I'm paraphrasing now, but like he kind of goes on and says, like, hey, like, I still acknowledge that there's, you know, there's racism in America and stuff like that. And there's still like a lot of problems we have in this country. And he doesn't say like people shouldn't speak up. But I think maybe what in the moment he may have kind of just been very heated and said what he said. And I think later on it may have been slightly mischaracterized. So I think maybe, you know, I think that's probably why is that, you know, he got baited or he was, or maybe he was just very heated in the moment. He said something that was probably a little bit more extreme than he really meant. But then people just kind of, you know, because we live in social media, people kind of caught that, right? That was the one that made it to the front page of our NBA on Reddit, right? But then his kind of walk back subsequently with other journals, other media members never got captured. And so that's kind of what we remember him as. But I kind of, but let me pivot a little bit, Jeff, and if you don't mind, let me talk a little bit about why I think candor, freedom, and the right kind of have this maybe symbiotic relationship. I don't know if that's the right word, but kind of like that very, you know, are in bed together. So I kind of follow like a little bit of like China news. I'm like maybe an amateur China watcher. I'm not too knowledgeable, but you know, I do kind of follow the news. And I don't know if you know this, Jeff, but you know, in the aftermath of the 2020 election, there were a bunch of, you know, Chinese dissidents that were kind of, you know, very, very perpetuating like the election fraud, essentially, and saying that, you know, Trump may have won. And a lot of people were analyzing, like, why are these like people that are clearly like very educated, very smart, like why are they perpetuating these lies? And the theory that many people have is that, well, they want to support Trump because he is a vehicle for their Chinese dreams, right? And so I think that's probably a good analogy of what's happening with Cantor, in the sense that like he is probably aligning himself with the right because it's a vehicle. It's the most efficient vehicle to realize his dreams of kind of a tougher China policy and possibly even regime change, right? That's the most effective mechanism is to do, right? Because you know, we don't, the hard left and the, you know, the very progressive left, they're not really talking about China the way the right is, right? That's, China's probably not even a top 10 issue for people who are on the left of the spectrum, right? But it is very high up on the conservative spectrum. And so that's why I feel like he does that, right? Like, just like many other Chinese dissidents have kind of aligned with the right and kind of perpetuated their nonsense about election fraud, you know, Cantor himself may be kind of aligning a little bit with them to kind of accomplish his own goals. I think, honestly, that's what's happening at the end of the day. And that's why, you know, it's just kind of sad, but it's also realistic about how, you know, politics are in this country and how alignments work.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think I totally agree with you on that. There's this sense that, like, I guess Democrats and Biden are less tough on China than Trump would be, which doesn't seem to be true. I think it seems like Biden has been almost as tough or basically the same with as tough on China as Trump has been. So I think that that makes a lot of sense why Chinese citizens would be afraid of that. And I think this kind of marriage of people who marriage of odd bedfellows, you know, definitely happens a lot in America. I think, you know, there are a lot of like, you know, especially Chinese Americans, again, kind of like being, you know, part of right-wing politics because of, you know, affirmative action issues and school admissions issues. I think there's a lot of, you know, synergy between that. And, you know, you see that with the affirmative action cases in Harvard and a lot of other places. So definitely you can get some weird, like, synergy there. I guess I almost wonder, you know, just the reaction that the NBA has had to NS Freedom. And I think especially from the players, not only the players, but also the media. I think, you know, Jemele Hill wrote an article in The Atlantic responding to NS Cantor Freedom. And, you know, I think LeBron James basically very much dismissed, you know, NS Cantor Freedom's comments, kind of like how he would dunk all over him in the actual game. But I guess I very much wonder, how is there a way for the NBA to move forward, I guess, or to speak out, you know, against China? Because, you know, the NBA is super popular in China, and there have been many issues about how the NBA has kind of swept things under the rug because of the huge market that is available in China. And, you know, they still seem to be on the outs with China after the Daryl Morey incident. But you also kind of wish that they did kind of like speak out against it more and, you know, do something about it. And do you think that it's going to kind of be, you know, no matter what, like, NS Freedom does, it's kind of like going to stay the same? Or do you think it could potentially change? Or will it kind of like take what you said, a superstar level player actually speaking out against China? And then that kind of gives a little bit more, because the NBA is, you know, it's run, at the end of the day, it's run by the players. And if the players care about something enough, the NBA is going to change, as seen from what happened to the bubble and everything with Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, I don't think, maybe I'm pessimistic on this. This is probably less of a basketball question and more of like a geopolitical issue. I mean, I just don't think any amount of soft pressure is going to get the current Chinese government to change its mind. It's just not. Like, China would rather, you know, like it would cut off its nose to spite its face, in a sense, right? Like, it would deprive its citizens of the use and enjoyment of NBA basketball and, like, force people to use VPN and, like, pirated sites than air the NBA legitimately. I think that's just the current stance of the government, and there's really nothing to do about that. I mean, the NBA's old ideology, which was kind of the old American, you know, the previous kind of 20 years, like, ideology, was that if you kind of bring basketball to China, you're going to get them to open up, right? Because I think the Adam Silver line is like, everyone enjoys basketball, basketball brings people together, right? But we've seen over the last 20 years, it hasn't really happened, right? You know, Yao Ming went in the league and left the league, right? But politically, nothing has really changed in China. If anything, it's gotten worse, right? I just don't think it's going to happen, you know. In terms of, you know, superstars speaking up, I'm sure it would bring, I think it would be great to bring a lot of awareness to the issues, but I just don't think it would make any difference, you know. And then also, I think a lot of players, like, don't really care that much, in the sense that most of them are not from China. They've never lived there. They probably don't know people that experience stuff like that. You know, at the end of the day, you know, human beings are very tribal people, right? We tend not to care about an issue until it affects us directly, or we know people that are affected right by it. And so I'm skeptical in that sense that it's going to happen. But maybe I think if, you know, yeah, I just think at the end of the day, it's going to be very hard for change. And so I don't begrudge superstars, you know, from saying like, oh, I'm just going to take the easier way out because, you know, I'm not from China. I don't know anyone from China. I just want my check at the end of the day. I don't begrudge players like that. So the gist of the answer to your question, Jeff, is I'm pessimistic, and not very pessimistic, about if there's anything that's going to change.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's I guess the other interesting question, should we, you touched on this, that, you know, you don't begrudge players for not speaking out against China, because in some ways they have to, like, you know, they go home, their job is simply basketball and collect checks. And they don't have this kind of responsibility to, they don't have a higher responsibility to, like, speak out. At least that's kind of what, that's what I think. But it's almost like there is a way for LeBron James to perhaps acknowledge what Cantor Freedom is saying without saying that, I don't care about this man, he is like an insignificant fly to me. And by doing it that way, I think he is being dismissive of the Chinese issue and basically not giving credence on it and kind of focusing more attention on the person but not the message. And I think there's, you know, it's almost like if LeBron didn't say anything at all, then, you know, that's kind of a way of acknowledging, you know, the situation and, you know, maybe sort of like the hypocrisy there. But I think it feels like the way he responded to me was like he's downplaying the issue and almost saying like, oh, because it's coming from this guy, NS Cantor Freedom, who is, I guess, just kind of this inflammatory person, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just cynical. I mean, maybe for the viewers that, or for the listeners, and for you don't know, Jeff, but LeBron really tried. Like, remember when LeBron made Space Jam 2? He made like a huge push to get that movie shown in China, which is why I think there was a lot of bend over backwards. Like, his statement against Daryl Morey was probably like trying to like signal to the Chinese government that like, hey, I'm just here to make movies. I want to get my movie shown in China, right? Because LeBron would make hundreds of millions off of that. And he tried to bend over backwards, and it didn't work. The Chinese government still to this. I don't think they've shown Space Jam 2 yet to this day, right? So it's probably a good thing
for the Chinese people.
Yeah, it's probably good for the people of China as well. But it's just one of those things where, I don't know, I feel like LeBron at the end of the day, you know, like I'm saying, this is my earlier point, LeBron has like huge business interests. He's like close to probably $1 billion worth of business interests and sponsorships and like people that like, he's probably signed contracts, right? That if he like were to say something, those contracts could potentially gum in jeopardy and he might, you know, be in trouble. And so I think he's probably put in a very like tough position. But the other thing is maybe just LeBron, I mean, to be like cynical, maybe he just doesn't care. Like, why should he care, right? Like, he's probably never been to China that many times, and he probably doesn't know anyone that's like suffered there. And like, you know, it's like hard for human beings to like sympathize with other human beings unless they have like a lived experience or know someone, you know, they have personal knowledge. This is kind of the way we're wired. You know, it took like a long time in this country to like, for us in this country ourselves, to acknowledge like injustice and inequity, right? And so it's kind of hard to, you know, when we take a long time to do that, to expect others to do that like very quickly. And so, you know, I don't think there's anything that can happen. But Jeff, I know we're running out of time, and I kind of wanted to pose a question to you. What I think would be really interesting, and maybe time for some drama, is that what if a player from China like made it to the NBA, right? I don't think there's anyone now that's good, but what if they were to make it, and then they played, you know, Cantor Freedom in a game, and he was like wearing those shoes, like, what would happen? You know, like, do you think that they would, like, I'm curious, like, what do you think would happen? Like, you know, we're kind of winding down. Maybe we can kind of talk about something. Like, what do you think would happen? Because I think that would be really interesting to watch, and what the reactions of people would.
No, I've had thoughts of, you know, I kind of want the Celtics to play the Nets in the playoffs, because you have Enes Kanter against, you know, Joe Tsai's team.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that would be another perfect person of.
Yeah, like another, yeah, like, uh-huh. Yeah. Like, sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
Just to answer your question, there's one kid, I think, who's in the G League at night. I think his name is Fonbo Zhang or something. Okay. And yeah, I think he committed to Gonzaga, but then he went to the Ignite team. And he's supposed to be, like, like a Kevin Durant kind of player, but you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, check it. He has a great highlight reel. I think that would be interesting. Because I do know that the current Chinese regime has been really pushing out like patriotism and nationalism. This kind of like, you know, like, oh, like, you know, this China. So maybe he would be like, I'm going to, you know, dunk all over like Anna's freedom and show him like, you know, there'd probably be like a really big controversy there. And it's so funny. Like, I don't think that freedom I think the other thing is that he's not a confrontational guy. He just talks a lot. He doesn't, you know, he's all bark, no bite. You know, there are all these stories that he didn't even talk to LeBron about it. He didn't even like approach it. This is the other thing about, you know, the person versus the messenger, that he's just not, he's kind of a softy, I think, like on the court, which I think, you know, players don't respect that. And I think that there would be a lot of Twitter talk beforehand, and then nothing would happen on the court.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I think that's probably a very good fair assessment. I don't know. I feel like maybe the Chinese player would probably just do something in China. I mean, there have been like Chinese players that have like there was like a Chinese swimmer that like was very like ostentatious, and then it turns out like he was found for blood doping or something like that. There was that situation that caused a lot of Australian swimmers were unhappy. On your point with like Joe Tsai, I think that's even more interesting. Because like, remember when Joe Tsai like put out that statement after Daryl Morey said, is like, yeah, this is like, I'm just like, like in the NBA, they did like nothing, you know? Like, can you imagine if like an NBA owner said something being like, how dare you insult the people, like the feelings of the American people by like protesting for Black Lives Matter? Like, how dare you insult like our heritage and our history by protesting and, you know, trying to like you take down the statue of George Washington and you're deeply hurting the feelings of the American people, right? Like, can you imagine if like an owner put something out like that? They would be laughed at and then they would be summarily like asked to leave, you know? So it's just absurd that the NBA kind of just allows Joseph Tsai just to say something like that when they would never tolerate another owner saying the same, like in the same manner about like some domestic American issue. It's just so weird. I get it. The NBA is in a hard place. At the end of the day, it's a business, right? They got to keep the players happy with increasing paychecks, and they got to keep the owners happy with their increasing paychecks. And so they're put in a very awkward position. But it is kind of ridiculous when you think about it and you dig a little bit deeper of, you know, the kind of the practices of the NBA.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think it's, you know, we're talking about weird marriages. I think this weird marriage between social justice and capitalism is really at play here, where it's quote unquote more profitable for the NBA and probably more reasonable for them to be supportive of Black Lives Matter movement, you know, in America, as opposed to being more outspoken about the human rights in China. I think, you know, if an NBA owner like was caught on record saying something like, I don't like all lives matter, they would be out. They would probably be, I mean, it would take like I think, as we've seen from what's happened with the Phoenix Suns, it would take actual kind of like very hard evidence for that to happen. But I think they would be out, and I think, you know, my opinion, like, rightfully so. But I think, as you said, you know, Joe Tsai basically writing that statement, it's a completely different story, right? And it's, you know, it's a little hypocritical, but I also understand it in the sense that, you know, you kind of have to meet people where they are. And again, like you said, the NBA is a business. And, you know, like, there's no duty on behalf of the NBA to be outspoken about any social issues, right? They just, you know, dribble the ball and make money. But they do, and, you know, I applaud them for that, at the very least. I guess, just from my sense of it, it's hard to kind of expect more from corporations or kind of like businesses besides what they can do.
At the end of the day, you know, it is, I don't know, this is probably a very depressing podcast for your listeners. Everyone's going to be, like, really depressed at the end of this, because it's, like, the conclusion I think we both arrived is that there's nothing we can do because the Chinese government is just very hard-line and, you know, just, they're just very, very hard-line. They don't give an inch, right? And they're very, you know, vengeful actors, right? They're just bad actors, and they do that, and then we're just like, hey, we gotta kind of just deal with it, you know, and meet them where they are. And I think for a lot of people like me, it's unreasonable, but you're right. Like it is the reality of the world. So yeah. So I guess maybe we can just end it at that.
Yeah. Kind of sad, but I kind of hope Freedom kind of takes this as a, also, you know, he's not a full-time activist. He's not, like, trained in these kinds of skills, and he doesn't know. I'm sure, like, not to demean his communication skills or his organizing skills, but he doesn't have the level of sophistication on this kind of thing. So maybe he takes it and he learns and he figures out a way to kind of marry his goals with the goals of other players. And yeah, I always thought this was kind of interesting. It seems as you did too, kind of how NS Freedom's Twitter explosions have really kind of been this microcosm of like how the NBA has treated China in some way.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I feel like the message I think we can all take is like, you know, we should probably as much as we can, you know, speak out in favor, like speak out like, you know, NS Candor Freedom did, and that's the best we can do. And you know, I'm sure he's gonna deal with the consequences of that, and you know, we should encourage him to do that. And then, you know, maybe, and I mean, these things, I mean, we have to be also realistic in the sense that these things take time, right? It took decades and decades of work for the NBA to change its stance on social justice, and it's gonna take decades and decades of work to maybe, you know, change how, you know, we view other injustices in the world. And so, you know, it's going to take the time and the work to do that. And there's no other easy way of saying that.
Yeah, maybe he shouldn't have changed his name. I feel like that was like a bit much.
That's true. Maybe.
Right, because he didn't. I think when you change your name, immediately everyone thinks of Meta World Peace. And I
well, I mean, he did become a citizen. So, I mean, yeah. Maybe it's not the end of the world. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I really think it was just like, I became a citizen. Like, I really appreciate this country. Everyone will be like, that's great. I was like, I became a citizen, and my last name is now Freedom. You're like, all right.
That's true.
Yeah, he probably, it's like one of those things where like, oh, great idea. But if you talk to like your publicist, they would walk you back from it.
Technically, he didn't change it. He technically just kind of moved it like one place, right? He moved his last name, so that's why he's technically, you can call him Freedom. You also can call him Cantor Freedom because his name is still technically Cantor Freedom.
I don't know. All the fancy apps have his last name as Freedom, so
oh, I'm going to okay. Go with that. Well, I guess you technically don't include people's middle names, right? But that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right, Jeff.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Kevin, for coming on, and I really appreciate it. For your thoughts on this, I really appreciate your expertise, and definitely
I would not call my expertise. I feel like I'm just someone that likes to read the news while at work. So I would not call myself an expert in any way.
Well, we'll say your knowledge at least. So thank you so much for that, and, sure. And your time as well.
Thank you, Jeff. Well, it was an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me on, and I'm excited for the next product that your next podcast, next product you're going to push out. Thanks for having me again.
Thanks so much. All right. Have a good night.